Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. On our last program, we had finally brought the 60-plus panel together to talk about Helen MacDonald's memoir, H is for Hawk. And we're into the talking about the things we liked about most. And one of the things I was mentioning, how she can get these moments of clarity and bring out these lessons. And I had talked last time about history, but I also want to talk a little bit about her writing and what she says about England. Here's just an example of how she opens the book. And to me, I have this view of England where it's like beautiful gardens and these lush lawns I've been to Chartwell, I've been to, some of these beautiful places in England where these just gardens and they have these huge cedar trees. But one of the things attracted me to this book is I heard it had great descriptions of England. And so when I got to the very first page, or maybe page three, she's talking about Cambridge and how Cambridge looks. And here's how she describes it. She says, 45 minutes northeast of Cambridge is a landscape I've come to love very much indeed. It's where the wet fen gives way to parched sand. It's a land of twisted pines, burned-out cars, shotgun-peppered road signs, and U.S. Air Force bases. to me, that's funny. That's not necessarily the way you think of England. But she's describing this scene. She says, there are ghosts here. Houses crumble inside numbered blocks of pine forestry. There are spaces built for air-delivered nukes inside grass tumuli behind 12-foot fences, tattoo parlors, and U.S. Air Force golf courses. In spring, it's a riot of noise, constant plane traffic, gas guns over pea fields, woodlarks and jet engines. It's called the Brecklands, meaning the Broken Lands, and it's where I ended up that morning, 7 years ago in early spring, on a trip I hadn't planned at all. At 5 a.m, I'd been staring at a square of streetlight on the ceiling, listening to a couple of late party leavers chatting on the pavement outside. I felt odd, overtired, overwrought, unpleasantly like my brain had been removed and my skull stuffed with something like microwaved aluminum foil, dented, charred, and shorting with sparks. So that's what I really like is some of those descriptions. Now, for all of you out there listening, there are, a lot of other descriptions in there that are really more glorious, I think. But that's really like the goal of every writer, to be able to capture something in a unique way and make it fascinating to read. And you think, wow, I want to go there. So we were discussing last time what we liked about the book today, and I think today let's like shift some gears and for this program, and now let's talk about what we didn't like about the book. And I think we all have some opinions on what we didn't like. So, Derry, I'm going to throw it your way.
Well, it's odd because some of the things that I eventually came to appreciate in the book were things that I really disliked at the very beginning. And what I disliked was the constant talking about the hawk and her relationship with the hawk. And she was always reacting in the sort of what to me seemed sort of an unbalanced way about the way the hawk would react. So she would shiver and she would be concerned and she'd be overly concerned about the actions of the hawk. And it's just like, well, it's just a bird. Get over it. sort of the way I felt about it after a while. And when it would come up again, luckily, like I mentioned before, she had several streams of consciousness. So she would move to another one and you would get away from that for a while. But then those other two streams of consciousness also had their elements about them. she went into rather tawdry detail about T.H. White, which I didn't really appreciate hearing all that. And
yes, we're going to talk about that. I want to talk about that a lot because I think it really took away from the book and didn't really add anything. So.
No, but I understand why she included that because of his writings about Hawk and that connected. But it was like, okay, that's enough already. That's sort of the way you felt about it. And then, of course, what I felt like got to be too much with also the memories of her father talking so much about that. It seemed like it reached a point where it was just sort of unbalanced, I felt like. And then, on the issue of her interaction with the hawk and the title of the book, H is for Hawk, where she actually becomes like a hawk, I was really waiting for for this... moment of metamorphosis, because there's a book by Franz Kafka called Metamorphosis, and in this book he actually turns into a cockroach. So I was waiting for her to turn into a hawk, and H is for Hawk, but she never did. She never really actually turned into a hawk, and actually she moved towards the end of the book. She moved sort of out of that and got into more of a state of balance, and it seemed positive again. But those were the things I sort of disliked about it. Like I say, as I got through the book after about page 200 or so, I came to terms with that and was able to sort of look at the positive sides of things, and didn't feel so negative about it anymore. I do feel like her writing is very good. She's a spectacular writer, great descriptions as you mentioned. But I think what bothered me most about the book were just those three streams of conversation. And how they just went on and on and on, and they seemed like they just went more than I really appreciated.
I think maybe a way to help understand that, and is that you really are reading a memoir, and so the thing is it's not it doesn't it's like you're looking at her diary, but it's not printed as a diary, and I think that's. You're really what she really does, I think, in some ways, in a spectacular way, is she lets you really experience what she experienced as a depressed person. Right. I mean, that's like I said before. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I do have some experience, you know, with the disease, and it does really make you wacky, mm-hmm. and so what you're really reading, I think, when you're reading the memoir. Is you're reading what she probably really experienced.
Right.
And so it's going to affect you differently because, well, you don't have that, you're not in that frame, you're not in that mental, you know, unbalance. And she does say in her interviews, if you have a chance to listen to them, and I recommend all of our readers out there, go ahead and listen to that. You can hear the fiddler interview on iTunes, and it's an hour interview, but it's really fascinating. And she admits she began to realize she was really going off, and of course she does like become like a hawk, and but then that's when she went, and then she started to seek psychiatric help, and she also then started taking medication, and you really don't have to do that. I mean, the thing is, you can overcome depression. In other ways, where you're not, you know, suffering through, you know, the medication and things like that. I mean, there are people you need to talk to, but not necessarily psychologists, because I don't believe psychologists truly understand maybe the spiritual dimensions of depression. And even the comment on our last program where the writer wrote in and said, you know, there's a certain truth that would have really helped her. You know, she thought her dad was dead and she'd never see her dad again. But the truth is, I mean, there are doctrines in the Bible that show there's going to be a resurrection and she will see her father again. And so I also heard another instructor in Shakespeare, by the way, say that one of the greatest sins is really despair, because you have no hope.
Right.
And the Bible is actually full of hope if people would read it and believe the doctrines that are there. And my parents are dead, my wife's parents are dead, but we do believe, you know, we are going to see them again. And so there is some things to depression. If you get into a despair like that, it's really facing the truth about certain things, and maybe facing truths about yourself is what really helps brings you out of things. So in a similar to kind of back up what you're saying is I did receive this comment from a reader, and I read only part of it two programs ago, and I actually wanted to save it for this program. And her analysis, she really did appreciate reading the book. And but then she says she kind of has a view of Helen MacDonald that I think it's good to share. What she does is she compares Andreas Egger with Helen MacDonald. And this is really quite funny. But it's really true. She says, Andreas Egger was a simple, minimally educated man who was raised with an unloving, self-righteous, self-serving, and abusive relative. Yet Egger became a very positive, compassionate, extremely hardworking, and moral man in spite of life's trials. Mm-hmm. And so of course, you know, I think all the readers out there know I love that book. Now she goes, on the other hand, and this is our commenter from New England. She says, on the other hand, Helen MacDonald had loving parents and an elite education and job. Her parents had enabled her to hide from real life with her obsession with birds instead of teaching her to also relate more to people. She worshipped her father, who lived behind his camera. Other people were mostly unimportant to her. That's why she had so much trouble dealing with her father's death, as no one else was worth worshiping in her eyes. After his death, she lived even more for the birds. Now, that's really funny. The punishment she endured from Mabel the hawk was sick to me. Mabel was only being what a hawk was meant to be in this world and this age. No wonder Helen had emotional problems. Her hawk guru, and then she goes on, her hawk guru, Mr. T.H. White, had even bigger problems, probably stemming from his horrible childhood. She didn't learn anything positive from his books. So I think that's a good comment and backs what you have to say there. And again, that was a comment from one of our listeners up in New England. And I thought that was very, very perceptive comment. So okay, we gave Daryl a shot. Now, dear, this is your shot.
Well, I think that was really a great comment there. It was very perceptive. It's true. That was mainly at the beginning. The thing I didn't like about the book was just the general tone that I realized I was in a book that about a person's troubled psyche. You know, she was troubled and, you know, wasn't dealing with death very well. And then we'll talk about T.H. White. And it just seemed like there was just an awful lot of people with problems and just not having the truth. So that was just the general tone, but it does get better at the end. You know, she does come out of it. And so I'm just going to say one funny thing is one of the good things about the book are the descriptions of nature. But for me personally, at one point I got tired of it because some of the times there were words I didn't understand, you know, describing the English countryside. I didn't know the names of the plants and the trees. And she really does talk a lot about things and the names of the birds and everything that I'm not familiar with. And I would have to go look everything up. So I'm sorry, that's just me. I mean, I enjoy the good description. But really, that's basically what the whole book was about, was description of because it's a memoir, like it's what she's going through each day and what she's doing. So that's about it.
It is a memoir. That's yes. We have to remember that. Yes. It is a memoir. It's not a novel. One thing I can tell about my wife is we do love to read books together. We've always done this our whole marriage. And she always could get through books faster than I could. I could never understand it. We'd set up our beach vacation. We do love to go to the beach. Set up our beach vacation. We'd buy the exact same novel, and I'm like on chapter 2. She's on chapter 10, and I finally, it's just the frustration of this. I finally said to her, "How do you do this?" And she says, "Well, I just skip all the descriptions."
I don't skip them. I just read them quickly. I read them quickly.
So she's definitely not a naturalist.
And, no, I'm not a naturalist.
She appreciates nature, but you know, I'm the one that would be out there in the details.
In the details, yes.
And so,
yes.
So I appreciate those things. So, but again, in defense of Helen MacDonald, she does admit in these interviews, and that's why I think they're so fascinating. She does admit that she got off the beam,
right?
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think in some ways it's very brave for her to print this. I mean, to print the memoir, mm-hmm. But my piece of advice to her, if she ever gets into this again, I mean, don't read the life history of someone that had a worse trouble than you did. You know, essentially, you know, in other words, if you are fighting depression, you don't want to go and read a memoir of a person that's also depressed and maybe even more depressed. You want to read the memoir of a person that dealt with it and came out of it. So the thing about depression is it really is kind of a fearful disease, and when someone gets depressed, there's not a lot of people that can actually handle that. But I think they're afraid of it because they see the person that they knew change, and it just almost can happen overnight. And so the thing is, it is what I've talked to a few people that have been through depression, and I always tell them, you're going to come out of it, you know, so be careful what you think now, because what you think now you're going to feel guilty about later if you're not careful. And so they always say, oh, I'll never come out of this, and I'm, you know, but it's a cyclic thing, and you come out of it. And in some ways, I think what the person that was commenting that we just read from New England is, you see, her parents really never prepared her for reality. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, people die. Everyone has to die. And there's no way of escaping it. Even this interviewer in Australia said, hey, Ellen, what's the big deal? Everyone has to die. Well, how did you miss this? And so I do think that I always try and make fun of being Irish Catholic, but I remember going to funeral after funeral after funeral. You know, we just seemed like, you know, all my aunts and uncles were much older, and my mother came from a family of 13, and she was 13, and my father came from a family of 13, and I think he was 13. So, you know, I had uncles that were in World War I, and they were already dead by the time I could, you know, was even aware that I was alive, kind of thing. And so, I mean, death was a part of life. You experience that. But if you look at Helen's background, I mean, she went, you know, she obviously had grown up with an artistic father, not autistic. He was artistic. He was a great photographer, and his name was Alistair MacDonald. You can find still see his photographic work. It's very, I mean, he was really very, very creative at it. You know, and then she went off to higher education in Cambridge. I mean, even that can take you off somewhat, because if when you're in the university world, and, you know, I know Derry and I have both been in the university world, even going into higher, you know, the higher education, I mean, the graduate level education, even after college, and you can get out of touch with reality. Yes,
very much so.
Mm-hmm. And so... Go ahead.
Can I say something when you're done with that? Because I have something to say.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Well, I just want to say something about why I couldn't figure out why she was so interested in T.H. White and the goshawk. And then at one point she said that was one of the books she read. She was fascinated by it, but that was one of the only books she read about animals that didn't die at the end. Mm-hmm. And the goshawk ran away, so there was always a hope that it wasn't dead. And so that kind of, she kind of related that. She realized she was looking for her father, hoping that as a hawk they could fly away and find him. And so that helped me to understand why she was, because it seemed that for a while there, it just seemed like. Well, we'll talk more about T.H. Watt. I know you will do that. But that, why was she so fascinated with that? But he did. That was the one book where the animal didn't die, because all other animals, books about animals, always die. You know, we always talk about that, movies and books. You
like
know,
Old Yeller. Die.
Old Yeller, yeah. Yes, right.
Old Yeller dies.
Yes, right.
I think too, it's a thing of abandonment. You know, the mm-hmm. fact that she mm-hmm. even named the bird Mabel, which is from Amabilis, the Latin for friendly, mm-hmm. it's like, and you see the way her persona is and how she interacts with others. She's very isolated, and that isolation comes out, and she's looking for a connection with someone that she felt connected with, her father. She's trying to find that through a bird. So, again, one of the unpleasant things about the book is this feeling of wackiness when you read it. But it luckily it goes away, and as you move into it, you start to see a glimmer of hope, and that really sort of makes you realize, well, yeah, this is not so bad after all. You can sort of look back on it and think, yo, this is sort of interesting in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Well, the one interview that I there was a taped interview, a videotaped interview, where you can actually see her as well, and in this taped interview, she was it's with one of the famous interviewers on British television. And I mean, she even says, "You went wacky," and she says, "Yes, I did. I went wacky," and so that's not the exact words. But when you see her, I mean, she really looks bubbly and she really looks bright. Mm-hmm. But like I said, when you look at that page, she doesn't look bubbly and you know, on top of things. So, I think she did live. She was kind of allowed to live in an unworld world,
right?
And then going on to Cambridge and graduate school. I think she even has a couple graduate degrees, and so you can kind of live in this unnatural world. Even though she's very much considered one of the better naturalist writers as well, but you can even you can escape into nature the wrong way as well, and so it's kind of like you can live a fantasy, but sometimes fantasy becomes fallacy. It's not true,
right.
And so. Certainly then, you know, we'll talk about the end of the book more next time. We have to have at least one more session with the 60-plus panel. But, you know, it is anything in this life. And if, like I said, Edge, the whole life was a novel, and yet it had more, like, things you could really bite on to help you live a real life. And in some ways... Like I said, with Helen MacDonald, it is a memoir. You're looking into the life of someone that really suffered a deep depression, and you're seeing her try to struggle out of it. That's a little unpleasant. And I think when we have a little bit of time to talk about T.H. White, I think in some ways her book would be really disappointing for a lot of people that have read T.H. White and the fact that he wrote, you know, these kind of like wonderful children's stories about King Arthur and you know, that great myth. But the thing is I do not believe she's really, you know, she does talk about, you know, homosexuality, and she does talk about some of these sordid things that the Apostle Paul said, well, you should never even mention them. Even in the daylight, you know. So in some ways, I think it's just part of this whole thing she's going through. But to me, when she mentions T.H. White, I think some of the quotes that he gives from, you know, the book, his book, Goshawk, I think some of those quotes are actually interesting. But I don't think it was necessary that she brings up, you know, about homosexuality and about some of the other sordid things he thought about, and she got those from his journals, and she added them in. And I have done a little bit of research on him, and I've specifically looked for was he a homosexual? And the thing is one of the pieces that I read, this was by a man that knew T.H. White, and he just died in 1964. But what he says is that he had a really bad childhood, and his parents did mistreat him. He was beaten at school. We know Winston Churchill was beaten at these public schools. That he feared it. He feared that he was, but there's no record of any relationships. And, you know, he had these kind of like distorted and perverted thoughts. And, you know, he was always trying to grapple with them. In fact, he got into Hawking to actually escape too, and I think that's why she brings it out. But you know, I don't really think there's any evidence that he was gay, and I think she could have left that out of the book, and still use the quotes from the from you know Goshawk, and it was still would have been effective. So we are running out of time again. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. And I do appreciate all the people that are liking that page. And you can even communicate to me on Twitter and I'll answer you back. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.